Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It is Season 6, Episode 70, the only retired jersey in Steeler history, if you can believe that. Ernie Stotner, way back in the day. And it's Bengals week for the third time this year. The Steelers in the playoffs playing a wild card game at Paul Brown Stadium, where they've won 14 of their last 17 at 8:15 kickoff on Saturday night. Dave, it's playoff week. That always makes it fun.
Well, I don't know about you, David. I can't wait to see this game. I mean, even though, you got injuries on both sides of the ball, talking about, Andy Dalton probably not going to start this one. And, we'll talk about D'Angelo Williams and his status in a little bit. But, I mean, you're talking about a Bengals defense that, it's impressive. I mean, there's no two ways about it. They're impressive on tape. It's going to be a challenge for the Steelers offense. And then flip things around. You have to be kind of curious of what's going to happen with this Steelers defense and how they're going to attack AJ McCarron, who will be making his first playoff start. So with all the stuff that's happened, especially in the last game, this should be a good one.
Yeah, it should be a good one, and obviously the big question, it really does feel like deja vu. We sat here last year doing this into the Baltimore game and just debated whether Le'Veon Bell was going to be able to get in. And obviously Le'Veon Bell didn't play in that game, and it was kind of odd. I mean, 6 months later, Le'Veon Bell's like, my knee's almost 100%, but there was a real sense, or at least he said after the Steelers had lost, if they had won, that he would be able to go the next week. Well, whatever. D'Angelo Williams, the injury, probably not as serious as what Le'Veon Bell suffered last year, but he's still in a boot today. And as I've said, don't let practice be your guide. Let him walking around without a boot be the guide. If that happens by Friday, I still think they'll find a way to have him play. Now, Mike Tomlin said yesterday at his press conference that this was not a high ankle sprain. This was more of a foot injury. I don't know if that makes it better or worse. If you have an ankle sprain, you can tape that thing up and cast it up, basically. Obviously, for a running back who has to cut is different than, say, an offensive guard who really has to, it doesn't have to cut, put it that way. So I don't know if it's better or worse that it's a foot injury, plantar fasciitis type thing, Liz Frank type of thing. It's obviously not to that degree that they're calling it that. We haven't gotten more medical information, but I'll still lean, although I don't know a lot of my colleagues in the media think he probably won't play. I'll still lean that I'll give him a little bit more than 50% that he goes, but certainly we're just guessing at this point.
Yeah, and Melanie, our Steelers Depot surgeon, how nice is it to have someone like that actually knows what they're talking about when it comes to this type of stuff? She wrote a post for Steelers Depot this morning saying don't count him out just yet, with the foot and all like that. And I found it curious that Tomlin even kind of clarified that during his press conference. Now, it's kind of eerily similar, I think, to maybe, and she posted about this too, similar to what Ben Roethlisberger suffered, against the Raiders earlier on this season. So, I'm not a doctor either, but I would think that a high ankle sprain would be the worst case scenario, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would think so too. I mean, assuming we're not look, it's clearly it's not a Liz Frank or it's not a season-ending injury. So I would guess as well. I mean, look, you saw how he went down and, look.
Grab for the ankle, didn't he?
Yeah, I've seen this. And, I don't know if it is your foot. I don't know if, you're all grabbing the same thing. The way it looked to me is if you were to pronate your – that's maybe not the right term. If you were just to take the top of your foot and lay it on the floor – and then have somebody fall on it, That's kind of, to me, I wonder how much he might have stretched the ligaments in the top of his ankle and the front of his foot. Having played soccer, things like that happen, and you know, it hurts like heck. But if you can keep the swelling down and you get past the first couple days, we're just guessing here, but let's just keep our fingers crossed, because it's going to make a difference if he can go or not.
Now, they take the bus to Cincinnati, right?
No, they fly. They fly.
They do fly.
Yep.
Now they'll leave out Friday, right?
Yes. Yes, they will leave the day before.
All right. So, I mean, no practice Friday, right?
No, they'll have a walkthrough.
A walkthrough.
Yeah, they'll have a walkthrough in the morning.
So, I mean, we won't be able to garner really anything from Friday's practice, report. I wouldn't think. So, I will be surprised if he works today. And if he works on Thursday, so, basically we're just going to, like everybody else right now, we're probably just throwing darts. But if he doesn't play, boy, Mike Tomlin sure did pump up Fitzgerald Toussaint during his Tuesday presser, didn't he?
He did. I've not seen anything to lead me to believe that he's the second coming of D'Angelo Williams. Look, the guy's he's a running back who's played in the league. He went to Michigan, so he's got pedigree in that respect. Look, if they're holes and they're there, he'll be able to hit them. If they're not there, like they weren't in Cleveland, then you're going to see more of the same. It doesn't, is it going to decide the game whether D'Angelo Williams plays or not? No. Do you want D'Angelo Williams at 60% or Toussaint at 100%? You probably want Toussaint, but if D'Angelo Williams can be 90%, then it'd be beneficial to have him in there.
Where was our head last year at this time? You remember?
I think we were fingers crossed that he was going to play. I think I was in the same boat, that I thought that he'd be able to come back and play in the game.
No, last year during the playoffs, the wild card game.
Yeah, I thought Bell would be able to come back and play. I was, fingers crossed, and then they signed Ben Tate, and that was the kiss of death.
I mean, where were our heads as far as a potential Archer Harris?
Oh, Tate? I was banging the drum that Le'Veon Bell didn't do anything in the two games against Baltimore on the ground. He had some receiving yards, but you look back at the numbers, and I don't think he had more than 40 yards in either of the two games rushing. So I wasn't overly concerned about it in that respect. The Steelers have had trouble running the ball against him, so they're going to have trouble running the ball against. Now, we can get into the passing game, because it's a whole different thing what Le'Veon Bell brings in that dynamic, but that's how I was trying to rationalize it.
I tell you, I wasn't optimistic about the Tate signing first and foremost. It's so hard to get a guy to come in and learn, what he's supposed to learn, and then go from there. Then to make matters worse, despite all the hacks out there saying that Tate's okay in pass protection, the tape clearly showed ahead of that game that wasn't the case. And I guess what I'm trying to say is their hands were really tied with how they were approaching the running game in that contest against the Ravens, because you have a guy in Harris that really hadn't touched the football much. He had a newcomer in Tate, which, he only knew certain portions of the playbook. And then you had a guy in Archer that really, hadn't done anything either. So this time around, we have Toussaint and Todman. At least Todman has some history to him that's tangible, that we can touch and we can see. Although he hadn't carried the football a whole heck of a lot this year, especially after Toussaint was promoted. And then we just primarily had the body of work from Toussaint this past Sunday, which, wasn't anything to get excited about, albeit, the offensive line didn't really help him out any. So, yeah, I mean, which would you take right now? which of the two situations would you take right now?
I think I'd take these guys, because they've been with the team all year, and Harris came up from the practice squad. Obviously Toussaint did too, but he's been up for he's been up for 5 or 6 weeks, maybe even longer than that. For whatever reason, Jordan Todman hadn't dressed for 5 or 6 weeks, or maybe even more than that, but he's been here all year. So I would take that over what they had last year.
How much work do we expect Todman to get? None.
Yeah, I would. You know, let's say if D'Angelo Williams doesn't go, I'll put the over under on Todman touches at 4.
I think that's fair. I think he will see some action because I don't think he can just put Toussaint out there for the entire game. Right.
And if Toussaint doesn't do well, you just have to give it a look. I mean, you know, if you get stuffed the first three drives in the run, even if it's not Toussaint's fault, if it's the offensive line's fault, hey, just give him a look. I mean, try something different.
One of the biggest mysteries to me this year has been Jordan Todman. I was quite excited about the signing, even though he was the number three, because, you know, I thought, you know, and the tape proves this as well, too. He really is a great all-around back, in my opinion. Pass protection, catching the ball out of the backfield, really, you know, and I doubt we'll get this after the season's over, but I really would like to know what kind of happened that all of a sudden he just falls out of the picture completely, and here comes Toussaint, you know, off the practice. And this, you know, that's even after – They signed Isaiah Pede, right?
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, you would think if you had that much confidence in Toussaint after losing Le'Veon Bell, I mean, you know, that much confidence in Toussaint after losing Bell, that would have been the immediate move right there.
Correct.
So, you know, just kind of curious. It'll be interesting to see how they approach this thing. And look, I don't think they should come out running the football. I think we saw a couple of weeks ago that you need to get Ben in some sort of groove. But on top of that, you're going to have to run the football at some point during this game with some level of success. I mean, you just can't go out there and expect Ben to throw 50 times, right?
Probably not. You know, I say that, and that may well be what happens. Look, I was doing some work the other day. And I don't know if I mentioned this. I don't think I mentioned this on Monday's podcast. Is, you know, Ben's numbers as a playoff quarterback aren't good. He's thrown for 276 yards or more three times, and he's lost all three times. And two of them are the most recent games at Baltimore and at Denver. Take that, you know, for what you want. The game's changed a bit over time, and Ben's changed a bit over time. He's a very different quarterback than he was in 2010. So that's only two games since 2010. I'm not suggesting for a second that if Ben throws for 350, the Steelers are going to lose. Steelers have a much better chance of winning if he throws for 350 than if he doesn't, in my opinion. But yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if you come out and run the ball in the first two plays of the game, just to let them know that we're not giving up on the run, but they're going to win this game in the air. And they're going to win this game if freaking Martavis Bryant shows up.
And that's a good segue. What do you think about Roethlisberger's comments on his radio show Tuesday? In essence,
saying exactly what we said on Monday.
Right. So, I mean, I know I don't have an issue with that.
Oh, God, no. Look, I'm never ripping anybody for telling the truth. Look, are you supposed to be the leader of the team and you can't criticize anybody and whatever? Look, life's too interesting. Life's not at all interesting if you do that. Is he calling him out? I don't know. Look, this is whatever. I don't have a problem with it. We all saw it. We all saw what happened. I've seen the results of his play of late. So, whatever lights the fire. I don't think Martavis Bryant's insulted by it, so I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, and for those people saying, well, someone should call out Ben for the way he's played the last several weeks, didn't Mike Tomlin in so many words do that during his press conference, saying we don't have to turn the football over?
Yeah, somebody said Ben's got to play better. He said Ben's got to play better. We got to coach better. We got, you know, yeah. Look, and Ben doesn't care either. Look, he's not an orchid, whatever. He can take the heat. He knows he's played poorly. He knows he played badly against Baltimore. But I don't want him walking around, you know, with that attitude, and he doesn't. So be it. This is a big boys league. Ben's making $20 million. He's making $1.5 million every game he plays. He can handle the criticism.
And he's paid to be a leader too, and you know, I don't have an issue with the comments that he made, and he told the media on Wednesday morning that he's since talked to Martavis about it too. This is a huge game for Martavis Bryant. I mean, it really really is. I mean, both meetings against the Bengals this season, he's caught 49 yards in each game, right? I mean, if he has 49 yards or less Saturday against the Bengals, does that guarantee a Steelers loss?
No, for sure not. AB can go off for 210 and Wheaton can have 80 and Heaps can have 100 and, Martavis Bryant can be a decoy. The one thing is about having him on the field is they gotta respect it. You can't just leave him there. And if they want to leave him there because he didn't play last week and have man coverage, well, have at it. I mean, just run the go route, every other play.
Somebody that nobody's talking about right now heading into this game, it could be a key factor, is Heath Miller, right?
Well,
10 catches.
Yeah.
10 catches in each of the two games this year against the Bengals.
Yeah, I think everybody knows. I mean, look, he's had three games in his career. He's had 10 catches, and two are against the Bengals this year. I don't think the Bengals will try to take Heath Miller away because of that. They will do exactly what they did, and Heath should have 10 more catches this game. It wouldn't, I said come out and run the ball the first two plays. It wouldn't surprise me if Heath had three catches on the first three plays of the game. I mean, we've seen the Steelers come out and do that. We saw them do it against Seattle. We saw them do it against Cincinnati. We saw it in the Denver game a little bit. Show that you're going to take that. And I still, if I'm the Bengals, I want them to throw to Heath Miller because I don't want them to throw it over the top to AB, DHB, Wheaton, or Bryant. Now, I'll give you the Heath Miller check down for 8 all day long.
What else did Tomlin say that caught your eye?
Just a lot of things.
Or ear.
A lot of things. Antoine Blake, again, Mike's – look, Antoine Blake got benched. Martavis Bryant got benched, period. That's it. Mike wouldn't say it. I asked him directly as – we'll get to some of the question we got in the email about, the etiquette of the press conference. Let me just tell you, the etiquette of the press conference, in my view, is one is I'm going to be professional about it. I'm not trying to embarrass myself. I'm not trying to embarrass Mike Tomlin. I'm trying to ask questions where I want to learn something, and people who are watching the press conference who follow the Steelers are going to learn something. So for me to say Antoine Blake absolutely stinks, how can you possibly have him on the field? That doesn't do anybody any favors. What I said, the way I phrased the question was, Antoine Blake played in the first half. He didn't play in the second half. We saw, good work by Cockrell and Boykin. I don't know. I can't remember exactly if I said, was he benched? I mean, I didn't use that term when I asked the question about Bryant either. I said, did that particular play, the interception, impact how much he played the rest of the game because he played much less than usual? Tomlin basically begged off both of the questions. He said the defensive backs, the rotation is, the way we're going to do it. We're not going to tell you how we're going to do it or why we're going to do it. It'll change game by game and game circumstance, whatever. They both got benched.
And that question came from who? Phil Brenneman, right?
Yeah. Thank you, Phil, because it was a good question and it's an honest question. It's kind of like, the Ask Tomlin thing we were joking about. There's a setting and a time and a place to do that. And his press conference that's picked up by the national media is not really. The question about what Mike does during a game is a very legitimate question for. And the way I would phrase it, if I were ever to ask the question, would be, look, Steeler fans want to understand exactly kind of what your role is once the whistle, the kickoff happens, the whistle blows till the clock ends. Like, are you a CEO type? How much are you involved in you oversee the whole thing, but how much, are you involved in the minutia? And that's how I would ask that question. It would have been funny as hell to ask it the other way, but.
It sure would have. What the hell do you do
here?
What
the hell do you do during the game? I thought the Blake thing, again, now we've seen Boykin's finally gotten a role as an every down, sub package guy.
And that was almost two full games now. It was the first against the Browns that we saw him play every sub package snap. Against the Ravens the week before, I believe he played all but four, and those were those dime situations when I believe Shemarco was on the field for a handful of snaps there. So, you know, to say that he hasn't changed up this rotation over the last couple of weeks is false. Now, the thing that Steelers fans are wanting now is, you know, why not just put Cockrell out there every snap? And here's the other common theme that we've kind of seen too, probably from what the Colts game on, is Blake plays a lot in the first half, not so much in the second half, barring injury. And I mean, I'm like I usually don't go with the mob here, you know, and a mentality here, but mentality as it, when it comes to boy, just bench a guy, but it sure is hard to ignore Blake and his play just week in and week out, and what there is to gain by having him out there. I mean, we've seen Cockrell, you know, look, Cockrell didn't deserve to go to the Pro Bowl by any stretch of the imagination, but he has defended some passes this year, and very rarely do you see him get beat over the top, right? I mean, I realize
I've been a Cockrell fan in terms of what he's given us versus, you know, what we could have hoped for. I think he's done a passable job back there.
So Mike's not going to change that up this week, is he?
Damn, I hope he does. I hope Cockrell starts with Gay, but he's not.
Yeah, we can hope and pray, but I think that it's going to be fruitless, you know, in the end. And I would expect Boykin to continue playing every sub-package snap, you know. But let's talk about now a little bit how you know, we expect the Steelers A.J. McCarron aside, look, A.J. McCarron has surprised me this year with his play. He really has. He throws a great deep ball.
I said right after the Steeler game, I was really impressed. You know, he came in, I thought he played great. Look, the pick six was a killer. He threw one interception late that Golden had. But I really, you know, he threw the deep ball to A.J. Green. He hit Eifert up the seam a couple times. I'm with you. I was really impressed. Now, I haven't seen much of the last couple games, and I know he hasn't thrown deep, and he hasn't thrown interceptions. So, you know, maybe those things go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean – and here's what, you know, let's take the last drive out against the Steelers in that blowout, you know, several weeks ago there, because, I mean, it's obvious the Steelers just sitting back in that game, and I don't believe Gay played in that final series as well. So, you know, let's remove that out of the equation here. I think McCarron has shown enough that he can run that offense, and Mike was quick to point out during his press conference that their offense identity really hasn't changed much with McCarron at quarterback. With that being said, you know, I don't want to hear that, okay, he's just this is his first playoff start. We're just going to sit back and not get beat over the top and just hope for him to make mistakes. You have to go after this guy this time. I want to come out of this game, and if it's with a loss, saying, you know what, damn, McCarron – really did a good job. It was a grow. You know, the narrative should be, man, McCarron, what a great performance by him. You know, the Steelers sent pressure after him all game. He identified it. He got, you know, he made quick decisions with the football, and he made the throws. That should be the narrative coming out of this game, and it should be because the Bengals are. You know, won a high-scoring affair on top of it. You know, that's the only narrative I think I will accept in the Steelers' loss in this game. I think they need to sugar these gaps against him, and by that meaning, you know, put Timmons and Shazier or Timmons and Williams up in those.
Just show them seven-man fronts, right? Show them seven-man fronts, drop whoever you want at times, bring guys late, bring different guys, a lot of what they did last week, right?
Yeah, send those, you know, send the safeties or corners occasionally off the edge. Make him identify on the go for most of the game and adjust to it. There's just no two ways about it. If you just sit back with this defense and rush four and play Dick LeBeau style defense of don't give up the big play, tackle the catch, stop the run, they're going to give up points. I would much rather them give up points by going after them, because we know the Steelers just can't get after quarterbacks with four men rush.
We know everything about that defense, and we've seen the good and the bad. And I, you know, maybe the Steelers got lulled into a little bit of an inappropriate sense of success against Matt Hasselbeck, and him saying in the post game, "I didn't expect to see them drop eight," and so they thought that that's something they could put in their bag of tricks. I don't think they can do that against anybody. I really don't. It's not. I don't want to see them drop eight against Brady, against Manning, against Osweiler, against McCarron, against anybody they're going to see the rest of the way. I want to see them do what they do. Bring four, or five, or six. Mix it up. Have them come from different ways. Look, we can parse the sack numbers, and I have parsed them a little bit. We talked about it last podcast. 48 sacks, 13 came against the Browns, and 4 came in the fourth quarter against the Colts. So that takes you down to, you know, what is that? That's 17. So it takes you down to 31. Doesn't mean they don't count, because they won all three of those games, and they won them in big ways at the end in this last one. But turnovers were a key, and, you know, pressure and stuff like that lead to bad throws by quarterbacks, and they make a difference. So all good stuff, but sitting back and trying to get it with four on occasion, sure, that's fine, but that's not going to get it done.
You talked about McCarron and the deep pass so far in the games that he's played in. 14 of 26, 53.8% on balls thrown more than 15 yards down the field. That's a better percentage than Andy Dalton had.
Oh, that's a, before he, 14 of 26. That's probably right up there at tops in the league.
14 of 26, 53.8%, 372 yards, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Andy Dalton, prior to him being sidelined, 44 of 83, 53.0%. So, I mean, they're right with each other.
Yeah.
And you know, so he can throw the deep ball. So if he's going to throw this deep ball Saturday, I want him throwing it off his back leg. You know, I think he has shown enough, in my opinion, against defenses better than the Steelers. That now he didn't have a great game once Denver kind of settled down. Denver has a much better pass rush, let alone corners than the Steelers have. So, you know, they absolutely just have to get after him and make AJ McCarron win this with sort of a short rhythmic passing game, I think.
Absolutely. Look, you know, if he can
patience and young quarterbacks usually don't go good together.
Well, you know, look, if I'm the Bengals and I know the Steelers are going to do what we suggest they do, then I'm still going to take my shots deep. And the good thing is, if you're a Bengals fan, is just like the Steelers, they can go deep with any of those guys. Sanu's not really a burner, so he might not be the guy that you're going to be sending deep. But Marvin Jones and A.J. Green, and then you got Eifert and Zubor. Look, we know the Steelers haven't covered tight ends all year long, and they did a decent job against Barnage. But, you know, Eifert is a guy who concerns me as much as A.J. Green, as much as Geno out of the backfield in the passing game. Eifert concerns me, you know, maybe the most on the Bengals offense.
How will this game define Butler?
I think, you know, here's the deal. And I gave Keith a lot of praise the first half of the season for getting a lot out of this defense and the turnovers. And I killed him after the Baltimore game. But I think with the talent level that the Steelers have, I think Keith Butler's done a good job. I'm just a fan of aggressive defense, and I think you are as well. When your personnel can't leave. There's not a guy you can leave out there on an island. And the safety play, it's been passable. Again, you know, that's the word I'll use for those guys. It's been passable. You just got to be able to get to the quarterback and hope guys catch balls. As I was talking about Mitchell dropping that ball last week, honestly, Dave, I can't come up with three balls Steeler DBs have dropped this year, where in years past, it was sometimes three balls a week we're talking about him dropping. Robert Golden dropped one on the sideline. What game was that just a couple weeks ago?
Was it the Colts game? Or
I think it was It was
Denver game.
It was a Denver game, right? Could have taken it pick six and iced it, maybe. But he dropped one. Mitchell obviously got hit in the chest and dropped that one. But you know, they don't jump to mind. Whereas I can still see, you know, even though Ryan Clark had decent hands, balls that Ryan Clark dropped. I mean, we could do a 15-minute video on balls he dropped. So.
I think Mitchell's had more than one. There was one down the sideline. I remember. In fact, I think it was against the Bengals, right? That didn't one bounce up in the air. Someone
is that when he tried to clean the guy out instead of looking for the ball?
No, I think it was the first meeting between the one down the sideline. I might be running them together here, but I think they've had their share of a few drops in that secondary there. How much does this, you know, if the Bengals, are you going to try to come out running the football to get McCarron kind of settled into the game?
No, I don't.
Or do you come out throwing?
Well, I think they want to mix it up. I would expect to see a heavy dose of Hill early to see if they can soften the Steelers up. The Bengals, I think, are pulling up my numbers again. 10-1 when they've run for 100 yards. And we know the Steelers pride themselves on, you know, trying to stop the run, make teams one dimensional. Well, this is going to be a key factor in this game. Yeah, so let's see.
And that's a good Bengals offensive line too. I mean, look, like I opened the show with, this is a good Bengals team. Both sides of the football.
I just did an interview for Tampa Radio and was talking about this stuff, and they said, you know, who's the bigger loss, AJ McCarron or D'Angelo Williams? And you know, obviously, you're typically going to point to the quarterback. But if A.J. McCarron plays the Alex Smith role, the caretaker role, doesn't turn it over like he has in the past couple of weeks, they have enough weapons that, you know, he can be just fine. I loved the question of if A.J. McCarron were to go and play a good game and win this game and Dalton were healthy, you automatically go to Andy Dalton against Denver next week? Hopefully that's a moot point with the Steelers winning the game, but that would be an interesting question to see as well.
Especially with you having, you know, a layoff. In other words, getting Drew Bledsoe, huh?
Yeah, right.
A lot cheaper. A lot cheaper there, too. Well, you know, let's look. You know, you go back over the last meeting between these two teams. The Steelers held the Bengals to 20 points in the last meeting, and 7 of those came late, right, on really meaningless drive for the Bengals. And then in the first meeting between these two teams, they held them to 16 points.
Yep.
And, you know, I forget how many putos came out of that game, but I think it was at least 10, if memory serves me, of the 3 Roethlisberger interceptions.
How many did Ben throw in the second game? Just one? Reggie Nelson got him deep, or?
Wasn't it 2? Yeah. Hold on just a minute here.
I know he threw 3 in the first game. And
He threw 1 in the second.
Yeah, so 4 interceptions against the Bengals this year.
Right. So, I mean, it sounds so simple to just coin the phrase, don't turn the football over. But, you know, heck, we've seen this. Look at the Steelers' record this year alone when they don't or when they win the turnover battle. I guess what you're saying is, can McCarron go Alex Smith in this game and win? And I think the answer is yes.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, the answer is yes. He can certainly do it. He's capable of doing it. All right, so let me ask you a couple things. You know, the Steelers come out and let's say D'Angelo's not playing. They're going to throw the ball. Is this going to be, I don't even want to call it checkdowns, because if you're hitting Heath, then it's not really a checkdown. He could be your primary target. Fitz Toussaint out of the backfield and shallow crosses to Wheaton, and you know you're going to throw to AB because he's AB. But is it just a blueprint from what they did in the last game?
And he didn't throw deep a lot either, did he?
Just his last throw of the game. His last throw of the game. He got picked off by Reggie Nelson. That was the one. You know, with a 14-point lead, maybe got a little bit greedy, or 17, maybe it was a 17-point lead. I can't remember. But he, you know, bent through down that left sideline to the goal line. And I'm trying to remember if the target was Bryant or AB, but Reggie Nelson came over and, you know, made a great – so the thing about Reggie Nelson, and this happened in the Baltimore game, they blitzed perfect and they got Mallett under pressure and he kind of threw the ball up. And if Reggie Nelson is a guy who will ball hawk center field at safety as well as anybody in the game. You know, he's not great. You're not a great tackler. You're not going to, you know, do anything in run support. But, man, he can read. He will follow the quarterback's eyes. So if Ben can look him off, you know, maybe that's a big deal. But in the last four years, Reggie Nelson's picked him off 5 times. So that's the thing about the deep ball. Ben's got to be really aware of where Reggie Nelson is.
Yeah, and I think kind of the blueprint that we've seen from several of these teams, you know, let's discount the Browns game is, you know, talking about the Bengals, the Ravens, and the Broncos was to kind of play the two high and say you're not going to beat us over the top. You know, we're going to make you, Ben Roethlisberger, be the patient one. And take what's underneath. You kind of, you know, you talked about the middle of the field. This is a game when you're playing, you know, some cover two type stuff, is you got to try to attack that middle of the field. And that's why I hinted at talking about Heath and hitting him there. You know, obviously you're going to try to get AB loose across the middle a few times. The only time really you should probably expect, you know, look, Ben's going to take his five shots down the field. Regardless, you know, on those 5-7 step drops, whenever he sees, you know, a singled up outside a matchup that he likes. Now, how much more he does than that, this offensive line has got to play great, because Ben is at his best, even though fans hate it at times, is just waiting and having that sandlot football kind of materialize in front of him, and that's when he, in my opinion, is best over the middle. So the offensive line and the Bengals are only, you know, I don't expect them to blitz a lot in this game. Do you? I mean, I think you're going to see the 4-man rush and them just dare Ben to take the stuff up underneath. And, you know, about, I don't know how much you can rely on Toussaint out of the backfield, you know, running some option routes and those kind of things. The biggest thing with him in the passing game that I want to make sure he does is protection stuff. Now, D'Angelo is a different story. You know, D'Angelo, I think, is a guy that you can, you know, hit 5-6 times in the game out of the backfield. But Roethlisberger, I think, has just got to be patient, you know, not make the bad decisions and hope that he can occasionally take his deep shots. And if, you know, if things turn out well and they are able to run against that 4-man front, well, then that's when I think your play action is going to come into play. And then you can really take your five, you know, your drops off of play action and take a shot deep. We need a Martavis Bryant game similar to the one they had against the Broncos several weeks ago, you know, where, you know, maybe one deep catch in the game, but let him do a lot of work with his feet after the catch on really something that really we haven't seen a lot of, you know, with him working up underneath.
That would be good. I mean, you know, that would solve a lot of the answers to this game if Martavis Bryant's a big part of the game plan and he has a good game. Look, if you tell me, you said, will the Steelers lose if he has 49 yards or less? I'll say that if he has 100 or more, they win. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, yeah, I'm with you there.
I'm
definitely with you there. I don't think they can win with him having less than 50 yards though, personally.
Yeah,
but
yeah. Okay. So in terms of the press conference, you know, I asked him about Cody Wallace's penalties. You know, the two things I didn't get into were the timeout, and we didn't discuss this last podcast. So let's. I'll just throw out there, you know, we haven't talked a lot of clock management the past couple of weeks. The Steelers made an absolutely disastrously bad decision. Mike says he makes all the timeout calls, although occasionally Ben will do it. They hit Marcus Wheaton for the 40-yarder down the middle with a minute 42 left. They call timeout. No problem with that. You got two timeouts. Now you're in Browns territory. They get Heath for 5 yards, and then they get AB for – either 18 yards to the 17 or 17 yards to the 18. I don't remember what. I guess it was 18 yards to the 17. There's a minute 7 left. You have a first down, and if you don't call timeout there, you have 2 timeouts. That's an eternity. You're not going to run out of time at that point. Go up to the line of scrimmage, burn 20 seconds. At this point, clock management is actually using clock rather than not using clock, stopping the clock. That's a ton of time. Walk up there, take 20, 25 seconds, snap the ball with 50 seconds to go. It's going to be your first down. You have two timeouts in the bag. If you throw an incompletion, the clock's obviously going to stop. They made a big mistake, and it cost them because the Browns went down and got 3 points in 58 seconds. Steelers played some atrocious defense. Yeah, after Moats got the sack, they still gave up the long pass to Terrell Pryor. But Mike did a terrible job in managing that, and they do that when they complete these long passes. They automatically go to the thing, go to the timeout, and, you know, sometimes managing the clock isn't managing the clock to stop it. It's to make it run that there's a bad decision.
Cody Wallace, 13 penalties, 13 times flagged this year. Two of them have been declined, 110 yards, 33 nullified yards, and responsible for 7 stalled drives.
That's a great stat. Is that your charting, or is that courtesy of somebody else?
That's courtesy of the NFL.
That's a really good number. Would you take that at the beginning of the year, 16 game season, he's going to play them all, he's going to make 13 penalties. You'd probably take that, right?
Yeah, because I mean, look, he hasn't been awful.
No, he hasn't been awful. He hasn't. You know, he's not going to make a Pro Bowl, but he hasn't been awful.
Right, and you know, people are right now already looking ahead to the draft, saying Steelers need to draft a left tackle right now because Alejandro Villanueva just isn't going to cut it over there. Look, they can win with Cody Wallace at center. They can win with Alejandro Villanueva. That's not the issue here. Now, if you start cutting down on some of these silly penalties, and look, you know, one thing we didn't even discuss in the last podcast, right? How many times was Roethlisberger sacked last week?
Zero, right?
I mean, we would have killed for that during some of those years, right? I mean, let's see, Roethlisberger, 24, 36, 349, no sacks, 3 touchdowns, and of course the 2 interceptions. So, now, it's not like he dropped back a whole lot, you know, held on to the football a whole lot. But, I mean, there were times in that game where it was like, oh, that's Ben being Ben type situation too. So they can win, I guess, really, you know, get back to the answer to your question. Yeah, if you would have told me that and I would have had some visual or something to go by off of how, you know, how what the tape said off Cody Wallace, I would have taken that. But still, you'd like to see those penalties decrease. Especially, I mean, false starts, you know, by a center. that's what really makes you scratch your head. I'm trying to pull up here what exactly guess his penalties.
Well, I guess I said to Tomlin he's had 4 or 5 false starts this year. That's my guess. I'm gonna say like, you know, one hands to the face or the personal foul we know in that Cincinnati game. He said there are 13. So, you know, I'll go 4 or 5 false starts. Probably 2 personal fouls, so that gets me to 6 or 7, and then probably, you know, 5 holding calls, something like that.
Boy, he's been all over the map here. 3 false starts. Offensive holding, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 holdings. 3 unnecessary roughness. And that's it,
yeah,
right?
That's 13. Yep.
And a partridge in the pear tree.
Right. Yeah, look. He's the question is
what that was unnecessary roughness. 15 yards a pop too. That, you know, look, he's an aggressive dude. We know that, Dr. Wallace.
Well, he's going to be your backup interior guy, right? Next year. I mean, when you dress, you know, are you comfortable? You know, we talk about, let me ask you this. Is there any chance Cody Wallace is your starting left guard next year?
No.
No chance? Zero?
Zero.
How come?
You don't want him at left. Look, I don't mind a few snaps over there, but just his angles and his quickness just isn't there. He centers his position and what he played in college.
Yeah.
I mean, that's go back and watch the tape when he was with the Bucks. Either the Bucks or was it 49? I can't remember. I looked at that tape, and he's a liability there.
Is there any chance B.J. Finney's your starting left guard next year?
Yeah, more so than Cody Wallace. You know, here's the thing about B.J. Finney, man. You know, I think they really like this guy, let alone, you know, they wanted the priority guys that they gave the most money to. And look, you can't judge a guy just because of that. But I mean, he was a priority free undrafted free agent. In the middle of the season, and they obviously they didn't IR him or cut him with any type, or maybe they did. If I missed it with an injury settlement there at the end of the preseason there, but they immediately as soon as that ankle
yeah,
of
that's
his
what they
healed,
did. They cut him and re-signed him.
They re-signed him, you know, as soon as he was healthy, and then halfway through the season, they gave him a rate. He's making what he would make if he was on the 53-man roster right now. That's how much he is making a weekly paycheck as if he's on the 53-man roster right now.
And we decided that's because somebody wanted to sign him away, right? That's why Anthony Chiclo made the team, because somebody wanted to sign him away. Steelers aren't going to look again.
They
like him. Yeah, I'm with you.
I mean, they like him now. You know, is he guard material? I think it's kind of too early to really look. All we have is preseason to go off of him, and most of his time was spent at right guard, if I'm not mistaken, during a preseason. So the question becomes, you know, let's say Ramon Foster, and how the heck we got off on this, I don't know. Isn't that the beauty, folks, of this podcast? You just don't know which way we're going to take you. We don't even know. Let's say for some odd reason Ramon Foster's not re-signed. You know, to get a quality starting left guard, you got to get one in the first two rounds, and they're not. I don't think they're going to do that.
Well, Ramon wasn't a first two-round guy.
Right. I mean, hear me out here. You know, what are you going to do? I mean, are you going to bring in a rookie and have him start at left guard? The answer is no to that. I will be surprised if that happens. So the question becomes, are we going to go Fanica with DeCastro and flip him? Which that wouldn't hurt my feelings at all, to be quite honest with you. Or is Finney going to be the guy, you know, to play left guard? And being as how he really hasn't played any left guard, even in preseason, I don't know. I'm more leaning towards I love running that power to the right, David. And we know Ramon Foster can't do it. I'm not convinced B.J. Finney can do it. So I would explore the option of flipping DeCastro over to left guard and letting B.J. Finney be your right guard if Foster's not re-signed. But I'm willing to bet Foster's re-signed.
So let's get back into what happens with the outside linebacker rotation. The Jarvis Jones thing we didn't really touch on on Monday. Curious to me, I didn't see him much out there. I didn't realize how few snaps he did play, which was, you know, a dozen or so. he wasn't mentioned on the injury report. Do you think it was just James, just put James out there because he's the guy? Or do you think it was injury? I don't, you know. I'm not buying injury on Boykin or on Bryant, so I'm not sure I'm buying it on Jones either.
What does it say if he's not – if I'm Mike Tomlin, I make sure I put him on that injury report this week with a hangnail or whatever. Just to make it look good. You know what I'm saying? That way you can justify when James Harrison plays 55 snaps against the Bengals. Who are you rolling out there?
Yeah, you know, you know, Harrison made a play. So I think we've been on the same page that we both would like to see Jarvis out there. James Harrison made a big play in a big moment. That I don't want to dismiss that. I'd still like to see Jarvis get at least half the snaps.
Andre Whitworth's no joke over there at left tackle.
No, he's solid.
And even James has his problems with him. So, you know, outside of using Jarvis to drop, right? I mean, and what kind of message does it send if Jarvis is not on the injury report this week, and if Jarvis only plays 20 snaps? What kind of message is that?
Well,
we are.
You know, that makes for an interesting off-season conversation. That's for darn sure.
Especially with a guy that you got to make a decision on giving that option to that we talked about. As well. Oh, what a mess. They're, you know, plain and simple, you know, they're going to have to get pressure They're going to have to send pressure. They're going to have to do it with more than four guys because I don't have faith they can get it done with four guys. And they got to force some turnovers and get some short fields in this game. If they do that, they'll win the ball game as long as they're not leaking it out the back end.
I don't know if there's anything else from the pressure that caught your ear.
No, I mean, I think we – what other questions? What was the other question? You asked one other question.
Yeah, the 2-point conversion question, and Mike, I said, I, you know, he's, look, Mike led the league. Steelers went 11 times and they were 8 for 11. I think if I remember correctly, somebody can correct me on this. I felt like in Tomlin's career coming into the season, I felt like that's about what the Steelers number was, 8 for 11, and they went 8 for 11 this season. There were about 95 2-point conversions this season. And believe it or not, that's fewer than there were back in the middle of 2000. There were either late 90s. There were 3 years where there have been more than that. Four of the more aggressive kind of unconventional coaches in the league went for none. There were five altogether, but four of them were Belichick, Chip Kelly, Riverboat Ron, and Bruce Arians. Can you believe that? Would you have guessed that those four guys all season long didn't once try a 2-point conversion? But I asked Mike, you didn't do it for you got more conservative as the year went on. You didn't do it for the last 5 weeks until doing it in the third quarter of the Browns game. And a lot of people, I think rightly so, said, why is he doing that with an 11-point lead, which is obviously two scores? If you don't make the 2-point conversion, it stays at two scores. 12 points is three, it's two scores, but it's two touchdowns versus a touchdown and a field goal. So it's significant. And, he basically, obviously, he's not going to show his hand. I said, are you going to have the same approach in the playoffs? He said, don't go to the bathroom. but I will say the only thing that I had postulated, and I said this on Twitter the other day, is maybe as the season goes on, you don't have as many plays left in the playbook, and you want to keep a couple for, as he said, a third and two from the two, or a third and one from the two, some later point in the playoffs that you want to break out a new play. So I'll give him a pass on that. I thought that was a reasonable answer. And then I didn't understand, Dave, how about on first and goal from the 8.5, they complete a 6-yard pass to D'Angelo Williams and the Browns were offside. So your choices are first and goal from the 2.5 or second and goal. It was about, I think it was first and goal from the 3.5 or second and goal from about the 2. I was surprised he declined that penalty.
Yeah, I was too. What was the answer? Did you ask him? You didn't ask him that, did you?
I didn't ask him about that at the time. I figured I'd done it. I'd had my share of air time.
Open mic was over,
huh? Exactly.
Let's see. What else was there that we're going to end? Oh, did you buy his comments about not thinking it's going to be one of those games?
Not chippy and stuff?
Yeah.
I'm betting sure hopes it's not. I mean, you hope the other team.
Who does that favor if we get into that? I mean,
well, let me ask
matter,
you this.
As long as you
and here's another thing that I was asked is, does the psychology of this game play a role? And the answer is, it doesn't play a role unless, look, I don't believe in kind of a lot of that stuff, except if the Steelers believe they own the Bengals, that makes a difference. And if the Bengals believe the Steelers own them, that makes a difference. Because if things start going one way or the other, then that can play into it. I think you get out there and you play, but I don't think there's any psychological aspect from the Steelers side. There might be from the Bengals side, the kind of 14-17, Marvin Lewis saying this is an exorcism. We're going to exorcise the demon of the Steelers. Well, obviously they're thinking about it a little bit then.
And that's who Burfict is though, right? I thought James Harrison's comments today were quite a pro. He doesn't view Burfict as being out of control, just calculated.
Hey, look, if your job is to be the Dennis Rodman or to get under somebody's skin, then so be it, right?
Right. Somebody's got to play that role, right?
Yeah.
I guess they don't have to, but he embraces it and has embraced it. Going back to college. I mean, that's who he is, and he's somewhat, don't forget, he played with James Harrison in Cincinnati one season. would kind of models his game after him a little bit, you know, different positions and all, but kind of that intimidation factor, and he's been fined and had some questionable hits and all like that. I think, and look, this is going to be the same referee, John Perry, too, this time around. Do you know that?
I did not.
Yeah, the same referee that called the last Steelers-Bengals game will be the referee this time around. So, and the league reportedly has already kind of sent, you know, memos to both sides saying, you know, we don't want to have happen what happened last time. But I mean, you don't expect a quick,
they're not throwing anybody out.
Finger, yeah. Right. I get that. That's where I was going with that. You don't expect that. All right. Obviously our predictions. We're going to talk a little bit more about.
We'll still see if unfortunately we weren't able to grab the guy we want from the Bengals, Paul Dunner, who was so good last time. He was unavailable today, and if he's available to do it on Friday, maybe we'll get some thoughts from him. We'll take a look at the other three games in the first round and where things stand. But yeah, the big thing.
What scares you the most right now heading into this game?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, play, it's not the D. I mean, you know, it's just Tyler Eifert.
And look, Gio Bernard always scares me, and I'm happy that Bengals didn't run him more against the Steelers in the first two games. We haven't seen a lot of him on the ground, but those two guys are dynamite. Look, AJ Green's going to get his, and I like their other receivers, but I don't know. The Steelers haven't shown they can cover a tight end. Eifert had 13 TD catches, and he missed three games with a concussion. He's back. He's what scares me.
That the defense in the whole as a whole is what scares me, really. Just them not being able to provide the pressure in this game and just sitting back. I'm just worried that they're going to sit back and try to wait for McCarron to make a mistake instead of aggressively kind of trying to force one. That's my biggest fear. That and Roethlisberger trying to force the football. I'm not worried that much about the running game, the offensive line, any other aspect, you know, stopping the run. I'm not worried about any of that at all. I'm just worried that they're going to sit back. But we'll talk more about this on Friday. Big shout out to Josh Latterout. Donation came in from him. Junior Anderson is a constant donator to the Terrible Podcast. We appreciate that. Jason Kelly donated as well, too, and I think William Zimski, we hit his name as well, too, in that last podcast. We appreciate the support to this show, folks. It means a lot to us. It allows us to do this show three times a week for you during the season and two times during the off season as well, too. You can also follow me on Twitter. I've been bad boy on Twitter lately, David, at Steelers Depot. All these people calling for Tomlin's head and wanting Ray Rice and Franco Harris re-signed or signed. It just, that stuff bothers me. At Steelers Depot, you can follow David on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast at gmail.com. Of course, if you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. The donate button's up there on the right hand side in the navigation bar. David, let's do it
as always,
on Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.